tone is too soon to step out of line. You might get laughed at, you might get fined, but do you fear me when I say I feel pain every day when I see the way my friends gotta slay and never get ahead of bills they gotta pay? No way, no way. Some make a living doing killing, Colombian penicillin. Some willing to play the villain, they just chilling to pass the time, pass the information, or pass the wine.
Hello, Houston, and welcome to the Houston Indie Media News Show. April 20th, this upcoming week, marks the five-year anniversary of the start of BP's Deepwater Horizon massive leak into the Gulf. The BP-owned Transocean-operated oil rig leaked for 87 days straight, pouring 210 million gallons of oil into the Gulf. This is the largest marine oil spill in the history of the United States. The initial explosion resulted in the death of 11 workers on the rig. The bodies of these 11 workers were never found. So for the entirety of tonight's show, we're going to be talking about the effects of this spill. In the studio tonight, we are joined by Johisha Duda, and later on the show, Sherry Foytland, who is an activist from Louisiana that was arrested this last week on Wednesday during an action at BP's U.S. headquarters right here in Houston. And so thank you so much for being with us tonight.
I'm really happy to be here.
And can you explain exactly what Gulf South Rising is and who are all of the organizations involved?
Sure. I coordinate a coalition called the Gulf Future Coalition that has been a large part of the Gulf South Rising Initiative, which is a year-long campaign coordinating events and actions around a lot of important dates that we're commemorating this year. There's the BP oil disaster that is launching kind of our year of events with this week on April 20th being the kind of the focal point of that week. We also have the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act. We also have the 10th anniversary and observance of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita for our region. And then at the end of this year, there's the climate negotiations in Paris. And so we're kind of building a movement across the Gulf Coast of folks who are doing climate justice and intersectional justice work to bring a delegation to Paris to advocate for our region, which is, a lot of, especially where I live and where Cherie lives in Louisiana, we're looking at having the first climate change refugees in the country. So.
And what are the issues currently faced by the Gulf area that were caused, because we're specifically focusing tonight's show on that deep water spill 5 years ago this upcoming week?
I think the, what we are observing this week is the beginning of a disaster. I think there was 80, you mentioned 87 days of oil leaking into the Gulf, which is unprecedented. However, just when the rig was capped, doesn't mean that the disaster is over. There's ongoing impacts. There's ongoing damage that's continuing to our marine life, to our seafloor, to the fisheries, to the livelihoods of people who, depend on the waters. We're seeing continuing impacts to the land. We're seeing continuing health impacts in particular, which there's been no processes or no, real ways of dealing with the fact that the Corexit, in particular, toxic dispersants that were dumped into the waters and have, really compromised people's health. There are people dying. And I think Cherie, when we call her in, she'll be able to really speak to that because she's seeing that in the, fishing town that she lives in.
Wait, so you mean all that greenwashing of corporate media that I've been hearing from BP is a lie?
Yes, BP lies. And we are, we have absolutely no problem in saying that loud and proud. And a big part of what we are trying to put out there is, BP, they can be honest. They do have a lot of money and they have a lot of power. And the way they're using that right now is actually to try to influence the public in a way that's completely misguided, manipulative. And they're really taking advantage of us and our region instead of being responsible and, cleaning up the mess and taking care of the business of what they did. It was really they're the ultimate responsible party.
I think Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of this, I guess, BP, what looks like a very major PR blitz. I don't know, it seems like sometimes maybe three ads, four ads a day, you know, trying to tell us and convince us that they're doing so much. But I guess my specific question is the question of the fish, the seafood, because that is a big, I guess, product or a big part of
it's
the
a huge
economy.
Industry in our
economy.
Yeah,
on the coast. And not only BP, but it seems like, you know, major grocery store chains are trying to convince us all, and I guess some of the cities as well, hey, everything's okay. It's okay to be eating all of that Gulf seafood, you know, regardless of what kind it is. But, I mean, can you touch a little bit
on that specific issue? I think it's complicated and nuanced. When you talk in particular where I live, where we live in the Gulf, I eat seafood. I eat the seafood coming out of the water. My theory kind of being that, you know, we do need to support our fisher folks. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing to my body by doing that. Neither do any of us. But it's a risk that I think we're taking. I also think that it's analogous to, you know, in terms of a just transition out of extractive industries to a more just and sustainable ones. We also don't want to put anyone out of work. So we know that a lot of our folks are dependent on the oil and gas industry. And so what we want to say is, you know, how do we shift our energy economy so folks who are doing that work can still do that work, but in a way that isn't extractive and destroying our planet and destroying people's livelihoods? I think similarly with fishing, we're eating the seafood, but we're also seeing a sharp decline in the catch that the fisher folk are bringing in. So actually this last week, we haven't gotten to really talking about the Week of Action, but part of this Week of Action has included an initiative led by the Mississippi Coalition of Vietnamese American Families and Fisher Folk, where they've been taking media and decision makers and citizens out into the waters. There was a boat actually that went today. There was one yesterday. There'll be one tomorrow. There's seven boats going out across the Gulf just to show folks what's happening out there. You know, see firsthand how little is actually coming out of the water. And, you know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but on Monday at the action, the memorial service, interfaith memorial service that we'll be having at the BP headquarters, will actually be bringing a replica fishing boat with 115,000 signature petition that we're going to be delivering via this fishing boat, because we really think that their story is the central story that we need to tell as we're telling the story of the impacts of the BP oil disaster.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, you mentioned before we went on the air that you are part of 75 different groups that are trying to come together to make sure that this issue does not disappear. So can you talk a little bit about the need for, and also kind of what the process has been in terms of connecting all these different affected Gulf Coast communities?
Sure. Like I said, you know, I coordinate a coalition of organizations across Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida called the Gulf Future Coalition. And the folks that have been part of this, we continue to grow and, you know, bring more folks. It's intersectional. It's cross geography. It's cross race. It's groups that you often wouldn't imagine seeing in the same room together. But we think, you know, this kind of unprecedented disaster needs unprecedented solutions and collaborations. And so that's what we're seeing and what we're doing as part of Gulf Future. We're using strategies that are cross-cutting that sometimes you don't see. So we don't just use policy approaches. We have folks who are doing policy work, but we also have folks that are doing community organizing work. We also have folks that are doing more cultural and arts organizing work, which is kind of where I come from. But, you know, I'm trying to hold together a lot of other folks who are doing different kinds of things and facilitating collaboration in a way to amplify amplify our message and to speak as one people across the Gulf Coast.
And then you also have people who are actually putting their bodies on the line, like what we saw earlier this week at the BP headquarters, in which six people were arrested.
We do, yes. We have folks who are across, you know, and I think, you know, there's also the fine line of folks, you know, where there's some independent citizen stuff and there's some coalition, you know, I think the coalition is comprised of 75 organizations, including folks who do all sorts of different things.
So we actually have Cherie on the line with us. Cherie Foytlin, are you there? Cherie?
Yes, I'm here.
So you were at Wednesday's protest, and you were, in fact, arrested at the protest.
I was, yes.
Can you tell us about that, about some of the questions that you asked and what the point of the questions were and who needs to be answering them?
So basically, we put out the call last week for questions for anybody that would have a question for BP that they would like, you know, BP to have to answer. And I got, I don't know, it was maybe like 20 different questions back. And some of them were just real nondescript, like, did you know what false advertising is? Things like that, because all those commercials that run, everyone's seeing, it's just not the truth, you know? And then some of them were more specific, you know, like, you know, how come you were able to write so much off of your taxes and then also get a $10 billion return on your taxes for the years 2010 to 2013? How can you have clear conscience about that? Why didn't you return that to the fishing families that really need it, you know? So it was a long list of questions that covered everything from the long dolphin mortality rate that we're experiencing right now, the longest in recorded history, the Gulf of Mexico, turtles. The health issues is a big one because we have just so many people here who are in dire need of health care, and the BP settlement just hardly covers anyone. So it was just a wide variety of issues that we continue to deal with. Our ecosystem is damaged. Our wildlife continues to wash ashore. You know, as I said before, the health issues that begin as skin rashes and respiratory issues, now we're seeing a just ridiculous amount of cancers. People in Plaquemines Parish are reporting about a death a week. A friend of mine I just talked to a few minutes ago, actually, Paul Nelson, had said that, you know, he's lost 100 of his friends between Katrina, Rita, and Katrina. It was also an environmental disaster. Few people know that. But, you know, most of the refineries went underwater during that time. And then when BP came along, my friend Derek said at the BP AGM, you know, just yesterday, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds more graves in the Gulf of Mexico than there was before BP. And that's just the truth of it. BP doesn't want to face it because if they did, that liability would probably bankrupt them, honestly. And I feel like that deserves to happen.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about a corporate killer. And we're not the only, you know, people that they've done this to. There's a long list of human rights violations that BP has done, including tar sands up in, you know, Canada to the indigenous populations up there, you know, down in South America. I mean, you name it. These people, they wrote the book on bad actors.
Well, and actually right here in Texas City in the Houston area, BP has the most toxic and dangerous plant, more so than all of the other refineries in the United States combined, and that came out of the Houston Chronicle about 3 years ago. And also, you did mention the lawsuit. Now, we're talking about the Restore Act of 2012, which, according to the website, is supposed to dedicate money from BP's lawsuits to, quote, restore and protect the natural resources, ecosystems, fisheries, marine and wildlife habitats, beaches, coastal wetlands, and economy of the Gulf Coast region. How's that going?
Well, if we can get the politicians to stop, you know, trying to build ballparks and convention centers and actually put that money into restoration. But, I mean, these politicians, they collect ridiculous amounts of money from the oil industry. So I have, you know, that's where their, to me, that's where their allegiance lies. And I talk about my state government, the state of Louisiana. I mean, it's no big surprise that Bobby Jindal, straight on down, is so very few people to actually represent the people. It's shameful, but it's also unfortunate that it happens in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi and Florida as well. I mean, this whole entire region has been built on this single-source economy that is killing us, literally and figuratively, and killing our democracy, killing our representation, where it's just so hard to get above that money to actually have a voice. And that's really what that that protest was about. And, you know, I don't even like to use the word protest because protest sounds like you're going against something. I can't stand BP, but the truth of the matter is I want a better life for my kids. I'm not, you know, BP just happens to be one of the major criminals. That's all. But when it really comes down to it, it's more about what we want to see and how the people want to take back control of our vision for our Gulf Coast. And that does not include poisoning children, destroying ecosystems, destroying livelihoods, destroying culture. It does include a just economy that's built upon something that's sustainable that we can give to our kids. And I don't think that's too much to ask for. I know it's not. You know, we're not just talking about surviving. We've been surviving for a long time. We're good at surviving. We want to thrive. That's what we want to do. And BP is directly in the way of that. They're an enemy to us.
And Joey, you wanted to chime in on that question.
I did just a little bit, just because the Restore Act in particular, since you know you're asking about it, I do think when it was passed, folks like Cherie and a lot of the colleagues that I work with at Gulf Future saw it as a victory and saw it as something that you know we had a lot of hope in, because it was kind of changing the rules to have the penalties from the Clean Water Act go directly to the region instead of into the treasury. And what we're finding is, like Cherie's mentioning, instead the states that we're talking about were given in the compromise with Congress, the rule that was actually the policy that was passed is super complicated, super convoluted, doesn't really indicate how the public can be authentically engaged in ensuring that those funds, when they do come, will be used in ways that are in alignment with the needs and desires of our community. Instead, the funds that are coming are being spent on things like, you know, are being proposed convention centers where, you know, there's protected wilderness. They're trying to, like, take beach, undeveloped beach, and make a convention center. So it's a really kind of sad story. I also think that in terms of our government, you know, holding our, not just BP accountable, but our government accountable to the needs of our folks. And we're seeing a lack of transparency and a lack of authentic engagement of the public in these processes. So part of what we're also trying to do is raise awareness of that the public's really been shut out, even though folks like Cherie and others in the Gulf Future Coalition were really instrumental in getting that act passed. And now it looks like those funds are going to be, you know, used in ways that are not in alignment with why we advocated for that in the first place.
And Cherie, if I can shift back to you, of course, we do know you were one of six people that were arrested this past Wednesday at the BP headquarters here in Houston. But you yourself have a very interesting story regarding your background, first with the oil industry and how you eventually came to work with exposing British Petroleum. Can you share that and also kind of tie in the events of this past Wednesday?
Yeah, really quickly, back in 2010, I was a small-town reporter where I live in Rain, Louisiana. I was invited by BP to go out on a tour, and I did, but I didn't actually get to talk to people, and I'm a features writer. I write stories about people, and so I went back down the next week and jumped on a boat in the Gulf, and while we were out there, we were out there for most of the day, but we came upon this oil that was just, I always say it was like a horror story, just enveloped the entire boat. And it wasn't very long we came upon an oiled pelican that was actually dying in the water. We pulled it out. We tried to get it back to Port Jackson where they were cleaning the birds, but at some point we realized we were not going to make it. You can't go fast in oil. And so we powered down the boat. And when we did, it was me, like a 250-pound Cajun strong fisherman, and his little boy. And I saw this grown man just hit his knees. He hit the floor. And we all just sat there in tears and with this bird as it passed away. And it changed my whole perspective, because that's our playground. The oil workers, all of us, that's where we play. That's where the culture is. That's where we go to reconnect with the earth. And to see that, just that fragile, beautiful ecosystem, just, you know, the idea of it just being lost like that, all those livelihoods, all of who we are in South Louisiana, just gone like that in a flash. And at the time, my husband at the time, he's not my husband anymore, worked in the oil industry. And when I came back, I actually did a speech for the Louisiana Oil and Gas Association about the moratorium, because where I live, it's a single source economy, which means that as soon as the moratorium happened, people started selling their houses. I mean, they were going down fast. We don't, you know, it's feast or famine in the oil industry. And it was famine big time. So people were going down. So, but at the same time, I also brought up the environmental issue, and I was the only one to bring that up then. Time goes past, and as I started seeing what BP did and started doing to the people that I care about. And then in September of 2010, I went down because BP had said that there was no oil on the bottom of the Gulf. Now, if you'll remember, just a few weeks ago, we found out there was a Rhode Island-sized bath ring around the deepwater, where the Deepwater Horizon was, of tar, of oil, BP's oil. And
can you repeat that for us, please?
We ran a thing across the bottom. Man, by the time I got back, I was so sick. Like, I could not breathe. I was breathing with just the top part of my lungs.
And what was the size of that ring?
It's the size of the state of Rhode Island, is what it is. And it's still out there. And they have not once even made an attempt to speak about cleaning that up. So it's still out there. It will still be out there. And there's other ones. There's other big mats that are breaking up and coming in all the time. Mm-hmm. We have it in our marshes. Just it like still comes into our beaches. You know, there's oil. When we say the oil is still here, it's still here.
Yeah.
There's not a day that goes by that you can't go to the beach and find tarball. And then, you know, we can fingerprint that back to BP. You know, we have independent scientists do it all the time. So I know that these illnesses are, I still suffer from these illnesses to this day. I have just ridiculous headaches. I still have breathing problems. And my kids started becoming sick, and people I knew as kids started becoming sick. There's no reason for my 5-year-old to start having kidney stones. My 11-year-old got asthma all of a sudden. You know, all these weird ailments that we did not have before 2010. And it's not just me. It's a lot of people in my community and south of I-10, really, is a toxic zone. And I'm not saying we were perfect before, but if it was BP that put us over the top, to where we cannot live a healthy life anymore, then BP needs to be held responsible for that.
Hey, Cherie, this is John. I have a question. Of all the oil that was that ended up in the Gulf because of the spill, how much do you think is still there? I mean, I know the ring and the size of that, but even that, how much? Because, you know, I guess the point of my question is that BP wants us to think that they have gotten most of the oil, that there's not that much oil left, that it's not that the leftover stuff that's still out there isn't much to be concerned about. So maybe besides that, I mean, maybe there's another way you could kind of frame or to give folks an idea of how much of that stuff that, you know, from the spill is still out there in one place or another.
I couldn't tell you numbers, honestly. All I know is what I see that continues
right.
to come ashore. And I know that they lied to Congress off the top.
Right.
You know, I don't trust anything that comes out of their mouth. I mean, they've been lying to the American public for 5 years now, and they continue to lie. The commercials that are just coming out are saying everything's all cleaned up, when everyone here knows that's not true.
I would like to mention real fast, the last time that I visited the seawall in Galveston about 4 weeks ago, I was playing with little kids, like 5 to 11, and we dug not even an inch into the sand off the seawall, and there was this oily, gasoline-smelling sand. Absolutely no question that it was mixed with gasoline. And so that's happening right here in Galveston for people who may think that we're not being affected further down the coast. And then we only have a few minutes left, so to both of our guests, I would like to ask, what would you say to someone who claims to be unaffected by the spill because they can't see the oil or they don't happen to live directly on the coast?
You know what? I think the worst thing that BP did, besides poisoning people, the worst thing they did was they hid the truth of this disaster from the people of the world. Because if people had to face what this disaster actually meant to not just the people of the Gulf, but to everyone and what it really looked like, then we would be changing the way we do business and how we use energy. we would be changing the value that we put on life in this world. And they took that from us. They took us the away from us the opportunity to evolve. And that is beyond criminal.
In the last minute that we have left, I'd like to touch on the upcoming events. Joisha, if you'd like to talk about the events that are coming up and how people can get involved, and then also kind of make the connections for us. The Week of Action for Gulf South Rising started with the Fight 415, which is a fight for a fair minimum wage. So, Joisha, could you speak about that, please?
Okay, so we're all pissed off. What's next?
yeah, so, you know, we are underway with a week of action across the Gulf Coast. It started on Wednesday with the Fight for 15, as well as the action at the BP headquarters. There has been the Come Fish Off My Boat has been happening, which I mentioned earlier. Cherie was actually on a boat earlier today with Tauvu and some folks in Mississippi. They had a press conference. Tomorrow was supposed to be our family fest here in Mason Park, hosted by Tejas. The weather, as we can hear actually here in the studio right now, it's not so great. And I'm getting an emergency alert of flash flood warning as I speak. So the weather is not cooperating. So we're going to be postponing Family Fest to Sunday from 10 to 2 at Mason Park. It'll be a beautiful family event where we'll be actually creating some art and things to bring to our interfaith memorial service and jazz funeral procession at the BP headquarters at 9 a.m. on Monday, April 20th, to observe the five years since the BP oil disaster began. There'll be other events in Louisiana that day as well, Plaquemines Parish, and in New Orleans. And it'll be continuing up until April 22nd, which is Earth Day. So you can find a lot more information about all the events at gulffuture.org as well as gulfsouthrising.org.
Okay, and I would just like to thank both of our guests. You have been amazing, and you've really shed a lot of light and given us a lot of details and also resources. And it's one thing to hear the sound bites, but it's another thing to hear personal accounts from people who are actually living this day to day as far as the long-term effects from British Petroleum's 85-day spill 5 years ago. And I just want to thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And before we close out, I do know last week we had a large segment on opting out of state testing if you have a school-age child. I do know, and I want to thank everybody who had positive feedback for that piece. One of the things I want to specifically address is that while we do not have an official opt-out option for parents here in the state of Texas, you do have the right to have your child absent. Now, I have gotten word from some individual parents that at certain campuses in a certain district, one of the largest in the country, they are being told that possibly they can be sent to court for truancy because they are opting their child out. And I just want to make it very, very clear for parents who are considering this option. If your child in the state of Texas has five or fewer absences in a semester, a parent can write a handwritten note saying that they are ill, and it is automatically considered an excused absence. So in essence, if your child has fewer than five absences and you want to choose to keep them home next week, it is a four-day testing window. You have your right to do so, and you will not have any repercussions.
And real quick, before we go, we will be in pledge drive next week. So we really want to encourage and urge our listeners to start now. Go to kpft.org, use that tip jar, designate Houston Indie Media, and stay tuned for 3 weeks of fun drive starting next Friday. So start rubbing pennies together, trying to scrape up a few dollars here and there, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely, and a shout out to Courtney, who can't be with us tonight, and also a thank you to Jacob and V, who are holding it down as our board ops for the revolution. I'm Rachel, signing off, reminding everyone out there, don't hate the media, be the media. Peace.
Peace.
In November, KPFT relaunched its morning program, Open Journal, with a whole new format. We're seeking volunteer production assistants to help make our 8 a.m. weekday program even better. The best part of all is that you can help from home or wherever you are. Aspiring production assistants should be able to help at least 2 hours a week and ideally have a Google account as we collaborate on our calendar and scripts this way. To get involved, email openjournal@kpft.org with the subject line production assistant. This is 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. KPFT.org worldwide.